Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Gygesch with the Petowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR, Revenue Marketer Radio. Twice a month, we meet to talk to real live revenue marketers and learn their tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from being traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And before I introduce our guest, let me take a moment to define the term revenue marketing. It simply is the process of transforming marketing from a cost center to a revenue center. And almost every B2B marketer is feeling the pressure to be accountable for revenue or some kind of financial metric. And revenue marketing, very simply, is the discipline to achieve that level of financial accountability. And every person that I have on the show, every revenue marketer, they're already on this revenue marketing journey. And they're here to share what works, what does not work, and their own gotchas or those hidden roadblocks along the journey. I like the gotchas. I learn a lot from those. So today I'm very pleased to introduce my guest, Peter Garza. Peter is the Vice President of Demand Generation and Digital Marketing at Med Assets. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hello. Good morning.
It is so great to have you here. I've been trying to get Peter on the show for months now, so I'm so happy that we could finally get some schedules coordinated and have him on the show because he has such a compelling story. And really what you're going to talk about, Peter, is you're going to provide us an engineering perspective on revenue marketing. So before we get into that topic, why don't you share with our listening audience a little bit about your current roles and responsibilities at Med Assets?
Well, yes, thanks, Deb. Really excited to be here on the show. So my role is really to put in place a demand gen creation engine to deliver sustainable results and to really transform our market organization from being perceived as a cost center to be a revenue contributor to the organization. So I started here about a year ago and started from scratch, ground zero, built out a team and put in place process, technology, and a strategy overall to find ways to generate high-quality leads or opportunities for a sales organization to then follow up upon in a timely manner and close those opportunities into real deals.
And I understand you've already had some amazing effect on revenue in a very, very short period of time. That's really exciting to hear. And so when you think about that journey, because you've done this in other companies too, this is not the first company that you've worked in where you've actually come in and kind of built a revenue marketing practice. And if you reflect on having done this a time or two, which very few people have, how would you define quality in revenue marketing? Let's go ahead and start bringing in some engineering terms and let's kind of equate those things. And you have a background in engineering, isn't that right, Peter?
Yes, I actually started my career as a mechanical engineer working on diesel engines out in the field for Cummins and then Caterpillar, and fell into the idea of marketing and fell in love with it, and then combining data and analytics into the whole marketing space, and that's really where I found my niche.
I have to tell you, it's so interesting. I love finding out from people what their backgrounds are in, you know, kind of like what their first love, what their undergraduate degrees were in. And I have to tell you, Peter, whenever I find someone with an engineering background, they always seem to be a great fit for revenue marketing. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, a great question. I'd say it's about being able to apply the engineering principles that we've learned to revenue marketing. In other words, following a systematic approach with designing and implementing a demand creation engine that delivers both growing and sustainable results. And it's how you go about it, right? And it's really, for example, we start with doing our homework, understanding the market, our customers, performing rigorous voice of market research, what I call is understanding our customers, our competitors, and who the partners and their pain points and needs. Gathering insights and then analyzing that data to really truly come up with the right opportunities and understand where the honeypot, like you like to call it, Deb, which I think I love that term, honeypot, really where we can make the most money and get the most ROI. And then we go further in understanding the buyer's journey. Who's influencing the decision-making process? Where do they go for information, for advice, and referrals? And then for those segments where we're struggling as a business, we take a deeper dive and understand and verify root causes to come up with the right problems that we need to address, not just the symptoms. And then we take a systematic way of testing and implementing innovative solutions by tracking, measuring, analyzing, optimizing. So that's what a lot of engineers do. They really just kind of look at a problem or an opportunity, look at the data, the information, and come up with a systematic way of addressing it. And that really brings into the point of having to be willing to experiment, really in a calculated way, to come up with breakthrough results. So the market's always changing. Technology is consistently disrupting the way we do things traditionally, especially how people interact and do business. So we have to have a solution in place that is designed to be able to be optimized and to meet the changing needs of the market and our customers.
You know, you make it sound so darn simple, Peter.
It's not.
It isn't. We all know it's not easy. But I love this approach. I mean, I never really thought about taking an engineering approach to revenue marketing. And yet, you're right. You take a look at a problem. You take a look at the data about the problem. You use a systematic method and approach to address the problem. You measure. You reinvent where it needs to be reinvented. And I also love your expression, a calculated way to experiment, because it certainly seems to me that in the world of B2B marketing, I think marketers have lost a lot of that sense of experimentation. So maybe we could talk about that for a moment. So in an engineering world, what does calculated experiment or calculated testing or systematic testing mean? And how have you applied that in your world of revenue marketing?
Yeah, great question. It's really about laying out the scope of the experiment and the boundaries, if you will, and then having a measuring plan in place, what things you expect or don't expect, and then be able to then react to it in a formal way. So, for example, is we implemented technology that we weren't wasn't proven in this particular industry in the healthcare space, and we went ahead and applied it for very specific areas in terms of engagement with the right content. We did some A-B testing where we would then compare, contrast different types of scenarios, and then we'd pick the best solution out of that. So it's really laying out a measurement plan, if you will, is really bottom line, is what are you going to go test, and then you go use actual data and experiences to figure out which is the right solution. And there's so many different changing things going on. No one's, at least I'm not smart enough to figure out what the right solution is off the bat. But if you lay out a couple or few in front of you and then use the market as your testing ground and to test it, then you can optimize and come up with the best solution.
And so when you introduce this measurement, the systematic measurement approach to your team, what was their response to it?
It wasn't too bad. I mean, part of it is bringing in a team that understands it and gets that and are excited about it, and that they embrace the idea of experimentation and laying an environment that if it doesn't go well, it's okay. We've got other things to look at and to test and to try out. So it's really ensuring that your people feel comfortable that it's okay to experiment, and ultimately knowing that we're eventually going to come up with breakthrough solutions.
And I do think that's so important. And so, and again, I'm going to borrow this calculated experiment. I absolutely love that. And actually, you know, would probably be a really good idea, Peter. Maybe you and I could co-author a paper on this, because I think this topic is absolutely fascinating. I think anything, any kind of methodology that a marketer can borrow and apply in the realm of revenue marketing, I think it just helps them do their job that much better. I know a few years ago, I began work on lean manufacturing and applying lean manufacturing concepts to revenue marketing. And I don't actually know where that went, but I'm fascinated by more models, more approaches that help marketers do their job better and help them really understand. Because I think it's so important not just to have those methodologies, but to your point, Peter, to have a team of people who also embrace and understand the power and the value of those methodologies. So I'd like to talk about quality, because, you know, when you think about being an engineer and you think about creating great products, You know, one of the things that people always talk about is quality. So in the realm of revenue marketing, how do you define quality, and where does that appear?
Yeah, so quality to me really is a mindset in all the decisions we make and all that we do. It's not taking the shortcuts, being willing to perform the due diligence or homework, and taking a data-driven continuous improvement decision-making approach. So to me, the facts and data get me really excited. You pay now for quality, or you pay a lot more later for it. And both, and I'd say not only financially, but also politically, for not having the quality in place. And to me, the quality starts with the strategy, the people you put in place, the process that you either create or optimize, the technology platforms that support the demand gen ecosystem, the content that you build to fuel the engine, and the measurement plan that you design into the program. And then ultimately, at the end of the day, the leads that you hand off to sales.
So for you, is that like the ultimate? If we had a factory environment, for example, and we were putting this product out the door, would that be the ultimate test of quality, is the quality of those leads when they're handed off to sales?
Yes. I mean, to me, it's very complex, as you know, but to kind of simplify it, yeah, I pretty much see it that way. There's significant negative impact from poor quality opportunity leads, and there's exponentially positive impact from passing on high quality leads or opportunities. You know, for example, the biggest challenge we have, especially with sales, is that nobody has enough time to do what it takes to win. For the most part, we're all managing through the crisis of having too many distractions thrown at us and really having a hard time staying focused on what is important, what it will take to win. So for any organization that relies on sales to bring and grow revenue, they need to be very effective and, most importantly, focused on the right prospects, the right customers, and their right deals. So I'm extremely sensitive to that. And if quality could either help the situation or make it worse. So, for example, when we provide a poor quality lead or opportunity, as far as I'm concerned, we're doing a disservice because sales cannot afford to go down a wild goose chase. They don't have the time to work on deals that will never materialize. They need, as far as I'm concerned, need to focus on prospects and customers who have the right profile with a high potential to buy so that we can meet or exceed our quota. So, but on the flip side, quality can make the situation better. For example, when passing off a great lead or opportunity, we end up being their heroes. The follow-up rate becomes phenomenal. For example, in Manassas, we're seeing, believe it or not, over 90, close to 95% adherence to our 24 to 40-hour SLA on every opportunity or lead we pass on to sales. And the funny thing is there's no need for us to come up with extra incentive programs or to have these beat over the head with the stick type meetings. Because when they follow up on a high-quality lead that we pass on, they end up closing more deals faster and easier, and they end up making more money and blowing away their quota. So as a result of this high-quality lead opportunity, our demand gen program gains that credibility, and we end up getting the support of our sales leadership team and the whole sales organization. And then when budgeting comes around, we have a much better, easier conversation on getting the incremental funding resources we need to deliver more quality leads. Opportunities to the organization. So as far as I'm concerned, it all starts with quality. The higher the quality, the lead opportunity passed on is really a true representation of the overall program and really positions us for sustainable results.
Sarah, I want to dissect this because this is fascinating. I never thought about this before, and I'm sure you could probably create a calculation for it, Peter. But maybe we need to create a calculation for this because here's what I heard. Poor quality leads has a multiplier effect on time, money, and credibility.
Yes.
On the other hand, high-quality leads also has a multiplier effect on time, money, and credibility.
Yes.
So you have to think about, and I often tell people there's more damage done between sales and marketing, pure lead generation stage, than anything else that happened. But I hadn't thought about the multiplier effects on either end of that spectrum. And I think you're absolutely onto something. We need to create a little calculation for that because I think that's a really great idea. So let me ask you this because clearly, I mean, what you say makes so much sense, Peter. nobody could argue with that. But how do you excuse me, how do you move a sales organization from give me all the leads to we're just going to give you the high quality leads? Did you have a challenge in that area, or was that pretty easily done at MedAssets?
Another great question. I'd say it really started with having conversations with sales, their sales teams and leadership team, to really understand their pain points and what was really, you know, gnawing at them, if you will. And the one thing that really was a big pain point was the organization's expectation of them following up on every single lead and ending up being a wild goose chase and really wasting their time. And even one sales exec, which actually highly, you know, reputable person within the organization, said, if you can prevent me from working on terrible leads, you've provided me a value add. Now you've given me time to work on other things I need to work on and not waste my time working on leads that won't pan out. So that really resonated with me, is that just making sure that we don't give them bad leads is going to save them a lot of time and help them focus on spending more time with the right customers.
And so you would
And
you would think, Peter, given in the world that we live today, where marketing especially is drowning in data about what the customer's thinking, what they're doing, you know, all based on that digital body language, that you'd be able to provide them some pretty good insights around what's good and what's not good to pursue.
Exactly. So on the flip side, it's not just providing a high-quality lead, but all the information around it. So we lay out in a very concise way all the pain points and issues, the insights, the dynamics going on in that organization, who else they need to talk to. And we've gotten feedback where when they had that initial call or follow-up, it made the initial conversation that much easier and more fluid and natural because we had done our homework. We knew exactly what they were doing and what their pain points or issues were, and we were able to talk to those areas of interest and really not waste the time of the prospect or customer, and really had, in essence, accelerated the process. So we've had many cases where normally a proposal request would take months, took less than a few weeks.
So I just go back to something you said earlier. You know, as an engineer, you say we have a problem. You take a look at the data. You decide on a systematic way to address. You do calculated experiments, and then you do systematic measurements. And it sounds like that's exactly what you guys did in creating this relationship with sales. You know, you took the time to understand what their problems were. You collected data around that problem. You created a systematic way to address that through the kinds of quality leads. You did the experimentation, you know, prior to make sure they were getting those high quality leads. And then you measure that through the percent of leads that are accepted and also through your SLA follow-up. So it seems like those engineering perspectives, you apply time and time again in every aspect of your revenue marketing practice.
Yeah, we're trying to. Yes. But that's ultimately the guiding principle, is really understanding where you're at and then measuring and then optimizing.
Okay.
And
so
letting the data.
Let's talk about a word I've heard you use probably, I don't know, 8 times already. And it's that word sustainable. So from an engineering perspective, what does sustainability mean? And then how do you apply that principle in revenue marketing?
Oh, great question. I mean, that's something that's dear to my heart. It's engineering terms, we call it a control plan. So it's really laying out what are your measures of success? What are the indicators or KPIs that you need to have in place to give you indications that things are going well or not, and what do you have to do to turn the ship the right way? So it's really laying out all those particular things you expect to happen or don't expect to happen, and to have a plan of attack. And part of it, too, is having risk mitigation. When things don't go well, what are you going to do about it? And part of that control plan is also the communication and change management, and really keeping your ear to the ground and ensuring that things are working on all 12 cylinders. So in essence, sustainability is really all boils down to monitoring, having a well laid out plan and monitoring your program, ensuring that it's growing, and if there are any issues that you can address it in a timely way.
So can you give us some examples of how you specifically applied that at MedAssets, any portion of this?
Sure. So part of the control plan is having a feedback program in place. So when, for example, going around quality, if a lead doesn't meet a certain expectation, that we are plugged into their weekly sales calls and they provide us immediate feedback and leads that worked out well and leads that needed some improvement. And then we take that feedback and incorporate it into our process or qualification criteria and make the necessary adjustments. So we started, as part of the control plan, we laid out what the criteria was for a successful high-quality lead or opportunity, and we embedded that in the process. And as a control plan, we measure against it. And are we consistently hitting that criteria? And where we are not, why not? And if we are, do we need to adjust our criteria itself, add to it, or take it away, et cetera? So it's like I explained to the whole organization, it's nothing perfect off the bat, but with a continuous improvement approach or mindset, we'll get as close to perfection as possible.
Absolutely. And again, I love the idea of taking tried and true principles and applying those to all these aspects of revenue marketing. And I think in the areas of, you know, certainly quality, in how we experiment, how we, you know, create a sustainable program. I think those are all very important elements. I also like, and I've heard you use this term several times as well, continuous improvement. So what is continuous improvement in an engineering perspective? And then how do you apply continuous improvement to a revenue marketing program?
Yeah. Continuous improvement, once again, another thing that's dear to my heart, is acknowledging up front, given the complexities of our environment and the ever-changing world, you cannot think of every type of scenario situation that's going to pop up. So you start with, I kind of take the 80-20 rule. It's another thing that's used. It's like, make sure you cover 80% of the scenarios or situations, and then the remaining 20% is we focus on over time to continuously improve to get towards 100%. So in the case of your mid-assets, another example is, looking at our advertising and then seeing, you know, which channels work best and which don't. So we know, okay, these are the certain channels we want to hit first, 80-20 rule. And then we look at the data and we consistently look at the data and figure out how to improve. And then part of continuous improvement is, once again, having that feedback, constant feedback from the organization, how we can make things better. So in essence, continuous improvement is really having the mindset that it's not perfect, it'll never be perfect, but there's always opportunities to make it better and more effective and to deliver more results.
So, I just love all these principles, and I think they're such a great fit for revenue marketing. But I guess the other question that I have around this is, it doesn't sound like classical marketers. How do you find people with this mindset? How do you find people who understand principles and can apply them? How do you find people who think about sustainability and risk mitigation and quality and continuous improvement and calculated experiments and systematic measurement? How do you find people like that, Peter?
I have no idea. You got me on that one. it's really, once again, finding folks that have that, I think, that have that skill set of wanting to learn new things. They're not afraid of the data. They actually embrace the idea of analytics, embrace the idea of trying new things and experimenting. So you don't necessarily, I think, you need to have a marketing degree per se, but someone who really believes the importance of the customer and providing and finding ways to provide value add, and then embracing, like I said, data, you know, experimentation and continuous improvement.
So I like that. And I also like your honest answer, because I love to ask executives, how do you find these people? And sometimes, you know, I'll get a, you know, 85-point plan, but most often it's like, who knows? I mean, these people they're hard to find. But I will say this, something that I've heard time and time again from executives when I ask this question, I do hear the kinds of things that you just said. And you said three things. Number one, there's an appetite and an openness to continuously learn. They need to embrace data and the power of analytics, and they need to have a customer focus. I mean, day in and day out, if I were to reflect on all the interviews that I've done and all the executives that I've met, I think they would say this is the kind of stuff that you need to get. And it's not necessarily something that you can train. You know, it's really a set of traits, or it's a mindset, as you said, that if people have that mindset, then we know we've got the right people on the bus, and then we can decide where we're going to go now that we've got the right people on the bus. So I very much see it that way as well, Peter.
Very well said. Yes,
so
I agree.
Let's talk about we're kind of getting toward the end of the show here. And I wanted to chat with you about, because, again, you've had a great deal of experience being a revenue marketing executive. You've done it in at least a couple of companies now, and I happen to know that you've done it extraordinarily well, and you've produced some pretty darn amazing results. If you were to reflect on your own personal journey, and if you were to meet somebody, let's say at a conference, and maybe they heard you speak and they came up to you afterwards and they said, "Peter, oh man, we are just beginning our journey. You know, we just got the marketing automation, my CEO screaming for accountability, and wow, buddy, what advice do you have for me?" What kind of advice would you offer?
I would say it would be three things. First and foremost, it is a transformation journey from being a cost center to a revenue center. So the road will be bumpy, and it's very complex. A lot of players involved, a lot of systems, technologies, processes, people. So my second thing is you really should consider partnering with a demand gen expert or company that's been there and done that for many other companies, and that could bring in best practices and a methodology to help you along this journey. And the third thing is have in place your set of guiding principles. In my case, is keeping the eye on the goal, which is quality, quality, quality. The quality in the people you hire, the quality of the technology you bring in, the quality of the processes and the content that you build, and the quality of the strategy based on really solid research. So those are really the three things. Face the fact that it's going to be a tough journey, but it's be very, very beneficial and fruitful. You're going to need a partner because it's a complex road. It's not easy. And third, you need to have your guiding principles in place.
I think those are fantastic. And I think it seems to me that a lot of folks have finally acknowledged that this is indeed a journey, and it's bumpy, and it definitely takes time. One of the things I can't get off the phone without asking you about is how have you managed change on that bumpy journey?
Great question. And this is something I struggle with every day on my job, to be quite honest. First and foremost, I see it that I recognize that I can't do it all. I need to rely on my good people, my peers, and my superiors to make it happen. And it's all about having a high-quality, motivated team willing to go the extra mile to deliver quality work on time. It's about challenging those ad hoc requests that come at me or my team without a clear outcome in mind. So really helping ourselves stay focused on what's important and manage expectations on those things that are not important or don't impact the bottom line. And finally, it's working my plan on getting additional resources and state-of-the-art tools in place to make us more effective and be able to position to deliver more results. So I don't know if I asked your question specifically, but these are the things I have, you know, I put in place and manage to ensure that we keep our eye on the prize.
Nope, I think you answered it quite well. And again, our time is up, Peter. I'm always amazed at how quickly these things fly. And I just want to recap Peter's advice. It was, this is a journey of transformation. It's bumpy. It takes time, and there's going to be lots of players. Bring in a demand generation expert, somebody who's done it a few hundred times and can help accelerate the journey and get rid of some barriers more quickly and help you get to success faster. And then the third one I absolutely love, Peter, and that is be a revenue marketer and use a set of guiding principles that help you make all the decisions that you need to make. And for you, it's quality, quality, quality. Well, Peter, I feel like I've been back in school, taking an engineering class. I learned a few things today. So thank you so much for your time today. I really, really appreciated you sharing your time, your thoughts, and your insights. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Deb. Appreciate it.
And for everybody, remember, please plan to join us. We do this about every 2 weeks. You can go to our website, pedowitzgroup.com, and take a look at all these great shows. You can also download these shows from iTunes, or you can go to your computer to at Revenue Marketer Radio and just listen, you know, just have at it. Thanks, everybody. And remember, it is a great day to be a revenue marketer. Y'all have a great week.